Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You think about the person in your life when you started believing you more than anyone else. They're the ones that made the sacrifice. When I walk out, my old man's next to me. They're not just looking at you, they're looking at what made you. I want them talking about our fucking game. I want them talking about us. All right, enjoy your lunch, lunch.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who's been really earning his salary this week with a lot of grunt work. It's Nathan Lee Clark. Hello, Nathan.
That's me. If I was a better coder, I could automate a lot of the hours I spent the last few days, but I'm not, so I'm manually copying and pasting tables into spreadsheets, exporting the spreadsheets into CSV files, importing the CSV files, stitching the files back together, and so on for fun. Just so I can make one little table and then go, oh, look, all those guys are left-footed, and discount them, or they're already owned by Chelsea, and discount them immediately and move on. So that's fun.
And does this explain why one player appeared four times?
I don't want to talk about that right now.
Too upsetting.
I've been trying to teach myself Power BI by using YouTube tutorials, and it's just the amount of people that can't speak coherently or clear that upload tutorials is amazing. Yeah. They put really good titles, like how to do this really clearly, and then you listen to it and you're like, what? What are you saying? Yeah, so I feel your pain.
I've got some bits of admin to go through. You know how I like my admin. This is important. Someone mentioned to us after the last podcast that they heard adverts about the oil and gas industry, I suppose.
Buying barrels of crude.
I think so. Please do let us know if you get any adverts like this, or adverts that you think might not match with the ethos of The Extra Inch, because we essentially can put a bunch of topics on a list to ensure they won't be included as adverts on our podcast. So if that happens to you, podcast@theextrainch.co.uk, let us know and I will adjust the settings. I think I've ticked off a load of things that now won't be advertised, but I could easily have missed some things. There were like 100 categories, so anything crops up that you think is sketchy, please let us know.
That's amazing. Hey, drink AG1, but I also buy a barrel of crude oil.
I know, right? I don't really know like why our audience would be targeted for oil and gas, but
gotta be the Americans. Gotta be them.
I didn't want to say it, but also I have ticked the button on Patreon that allows the maximum 16% off annual Patreon subs. That will be live for the next few days. So patreon.com/theextrainch if you are contemplating getting an annual sub. Maybe it'd be a Christmas present for someone. Nice Christmas gift. I also want to give a shout out to a charity. I got this really lovely email. So this is from John Bergman, who says, "Hi guys, former Spurs mascot John Bergman here. What, you don't remember me in 1993 running out with Gary Mabbott for our annual defeat at Villa Park? I wanted to write to you firstly to say thanks for the pod. It helps me stay connected with the hopeful and hopelessness cycle of being a Spurs fan whilst marooned here in New York. And secondly, to flag up a project I've just completed. I'm a painter and I've just collaborated with the Balls Project in the UK to make a colourful football that supports goals for girls, a charity with a commitment to empower and support women and girls who lack opportunities within London's most marginalised communities through the power of football. Any support and sharing the project would be amazing. The balls are beautiful, the perfect gift, what with Christmas breathing down our necks, and collector's items that also supports a really great charity. And yeah, John's design is quite spectacular, and the other designs are cool as well. So we'll link to that in the show notes. If you want to support that charity and support John, then take a look at that. Worth a look anyway, just to see his really unique design, I think. But yeah, I thought that was cool. So thanks so much, John, for getting in touch, for your kind words, and hopefully you'll get some support from the Extra Inch listeners. It's the international break, and I don't want to talk about international football, I don't know about you guys. So instead, I thought we would perhaps reflect on the season so far and how it matches up to our pre-season expectations. So, Bardi, when we appointed Postecoglou, I can't imagine you knew an awful lot about him, but from the content you guzzled down after his appointment to where we are now, sort of how are you feeling about things?
We all know where I stood with the Italian and how I totally believed in him, and I was sure that he was going to make us great. So we all know how much I committed to that guy and how much I wanted it to work out, and it didn't. So that I was really hurt. I was in a real bad place in terms of faith in Tottenham, faith in our players and everything else. So I didn't know who I wanted next. I wasn't really bothered by it because I was still too hurt. So we had this weird thing where we went through the summer and you lot were telling me about what was his name? Slot. And how he would be good and how that was going to work. And then it seemed everybody was doing opinion pieces on that Slot was going to be the next manager, and then he wasn't. And then we ended up with Postecoglou, which I think Nathan was the first person to say that he was happy that Slot didn't get the job and Postecoglou was much more Spurs. So I was willing just to go with it, but keep a watchful eye on him in case he turned out to be a fraud. Thelonious used something on the Fighting Cock the other week. He said he started a fraud watch to make sure that Ange isn't just a PR stunt. And I've been a little bit like that from the start. I've been curious to see how we're going to play, whether or not it works, whether or not it is sustainable. And so far, he's exceeded expectations. That's including the two losses that we've suffered now. So far, he's done more than I was expected. So I'm in a decent place with him.
Nice. And how, I know we've had this conversation over and over again, but how much are you enjoying the football? How important is that to you that we play nice stuff? How are you getting on with that?
Me? I'm happy we play nice football. I'm happier when we play winning football, which is something that I've always said it's my shtick. But yeah, I'm happy with how we play. But I think more than that, I'm happy about the feeling around the stadium has been really nice. Going to watch Spurs again has been a pleasure, and it wasn't the last 6-7 months. It wasn't a pleasure going to watch Spurs, especially kind of like after the Milan game and everything else. It was painful to go to the stadium. You'd notice more people would spend the majority of the game down in the concourse rather than up in the stands. And I think the biggest change in terms of support of Spurs is after the final whistle, people remain in their seats to say well done to the players, to enjoy the bangers that the DJ plays, and just to say hello to Postecoglou. And that was the same after the Chelsea game. Even though it finished like at midnight, people stayed in their seats to applaud the team. And I think that's been one of the big changes, people hanging around to the final whistle to support the team.
Bardi, I've known you for many years. You're a cynical old bastard. You really are. how do you feel about that? How do you feel about, you know, do you want to stay and applaud the players off the pitch? And do you feel like there's something happening in regards to the relationship between the players and the fans?
I think, honestly, because it was so bad, people are just so happy to jump onto any kind of positivity, if you see what I mean, that we won some games in the last minute, which always helps the kind of vibes around the club. But I do think because we were so desperate for something, we just jumped onto this immediately because we had a manager who said nice things. We signed some good players who were really good and interesting to watch. So I think we perhaps jumped on the Postecoglou bandwagon faster than I remember us jumping on any kind of bandwagon in the past. It took Pochettino 6 months, maybe. It took Conte a few months in his first season where things were going well before we really took to him. So I've been surprised at the speed of it. But it's good. you know, there's enough misery in the world that we can enjoy going to watch football. But I do think things will change if we start losing games, start losing more matches.
Nathan, you were pretty enthusiastic from the off about Postecoglou. You liked him as a person. You also thought that his style broadly would scale up. You had some concerns about his pressing, which I think he has somewhat calmed with some tweaks, given the team he has around him as well. How are you feeling about things?
Man, I don't know if there's ever been a better time international break in the history of football, because I feel so good about Spurs. I feel so, so good about Tottenham. And like, obviously, I'm definitely someone who is much more long-term minded with football-related stuff. But that's so much easier when we haven't like lost a game of football yesterday or the day before, right? We've had a week off, and I feel good. I feel really good. Obviously, we've lost half our team, and that sucks. And when the international break is over, when we resume, we're still not going to be where we want to be for a few weeks, and things are gonna be a little difficult for the next few weeks. But man, long term, I feel a way again. I've said this before, but I feel a way about Spurs that I didn't feel about Spurs for most of the sort of 4 years prior. Right, it's significant. I think you just asked Bardi about staying and applauding. I'm remembering I went to a Europa League game in what 2015 under Pochettino. We played Tuchel's Dortmund, and we rotated our team, and they absolutely blew us away. Completely outplayed us with the best football Tuchel's played in his career, in my opinion. And we sang Park Lane and Shelfside for half an hour, and then we applauded the team off the pitch. And that's a really outstanding Spurs memory for me. That's right near the top. And yeah, that took more than 6 months. That took 18 months. That took 2 years to build, to be in a place where we can say, hey, we've just been completely played off the pitch. But the message that we as fans want to send is we see where this is going. We feel really, really good about the long term. We're really impressed with what we're seeing from this club. So we want to end the match with a positive message. To be there within 3 months speaks both to the football that we've played on the pitch, but also Postecoglou as a person, how he speaks, and the confidence that instills.
I do think, though, this is his real first test now as a Spurs manager. Maybe the Kane saga was a little bit of a test in terms of how you handle the media, but I think on the pitch now he has to make some changes because we can't go into another game with Dier, Davies and Højbjerg, or a midfield. I listened back to the previous pod and you called that midfield trio last week disgusting. And I don't think we can play those three again. So something's going to have to be changed. And Lo Celso played 10 minutes last week versus Bentancur, who played 30 minutes. So they've got some minutes in their legs. And I think both or at least one of them will need to start the next game, because we can't afford to lose against Villa with the games we've got coming up.
I think Bentancur came off the bench and played 30 minutes under Bielsa twice for Uruguay, if that's correct, over the international break. So that's good. That's actually, we entered the pod annoyed that he'd been called up, but actually two lots of half an hour is probably pretty good for where he's at now, even with the miles. I think that losing Kane is a big test, a huge ask, and it only seems like a maybe because of how well we sailed over it. And I think, and I said at the time that actually Kane is like not a great fit for Postecoglou's style, and we happen to have Son and Richarlison who actually happen to be really good fits for the role that Postecoglou's forwards typically plays. And so in a lot of ways, there's actually a perfect circumstance there for Postecoglou. But if we'd lost Kane under Conte, if we'd lost Kane under Mourinho, if we'd lost Kane before Nuno came in, we wouldn't be going, oh, maybe that was kind of a test. Like that would have been catastrophic. So I think although his his tactical styles happened to help him out in that situation. Losing Kane was a very, very significant test to overcome, and he definitely did that. And I think that, yeah, I think that the way that we overcome this test is probably less about winning regardless and more about just sailing through on vibes alone until we can actually patch an 11 together again.
Yeah, I mean, I think also you could say that integrating Vicario and Van de Ven into the Premier League is a test. I think Udogi, you know, performing to his level is testament to Postecoglou's ability to sort of coach him into a new role, new league. So I think he comes away with an awful lot of credit having passed those tests, in my opinion. I definitely am sort of in a similar position to Nathan in terms of I've got the love back, I've got the bug back. I really am invested in us again in a way that I haven't been for years. And it feels really lovely, but with that sort of investment comes the pain, you know, the pain of that Wolves game, losing in the last minute. It was awful. I felt shit. I hated it.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It is good. The downs come with the ups, and we've had a lot of ups this season. Everything's felt very nice, very smooth. And I knew this was coming. I knew that our squad was weak. I knew that it would be exposed at some point. It just was a bit cruel in the way it happened in that Chelsea game. The sendings off, the injuries all hitting at once. I think the big test is replacing Maddison. I think a lot of people are focused on the defence, and rightly so, because Van de Ven has been fantastic. Romero has also been really, really impressive this season, and then their big losses. But I think with Porro, Udogi, Romero back after the City game, and then, you know, probably Dier or Davis, I think we're okay. I think we can cope. I worry about how we replace Maddison, and what I'm absolutely intrigued by is how he goes about replacing Maddison, because Højbjerg for Maddison is not a suitable stitch-up job. That doesn't work. Trying to use Saar as a more creative midfielder doesn't work. So he has to find another solution, and I'm really interested in how he goes about trying to do that. Personally, also very pleased to see Bentancur be used sparingly by Bielsa. I think we ought to continue to use Bentancur sparingly, because I don't think it's worth risking his health for a sort of short-term injury crisis. And I would be looking at other solutions from within the squad. For me, Donnelly would be one of those solutions. He's also got Brian Hill, Giovanni Lo Celso. He's got the option of moving Kulusevski inside. So there are possibilities there. And I think given the sort of health and lack of sharpness of our current midfield options, I said this on the Plus Dave podcast, which I was honoured to guest on this week. I think it'll be a combination of those options, because they'll probably play, one will play 50, 55, 60 minutes, and then someone else will come off the bench and play the rest against Villa. And then depending on how that goes, will probably affect the selection against City and the selection against West Ham and then Newcastle. So yeah, really intrigued to see how he tackles this little conundrum. Wasn't impressed that he used Højbjerg, but I understand why under the circumstances with the limited time, between the Chelsea and the Wolves match and with the sort of limited fitness and match fitness of the suitable replacements.
I also don't think Bentancur is a good stylistic fit for that role anyway, right? He's going to be more creative in that role than Højbjerg, but that doesn't mean that he's creative enough. I really like Bentancur, and he's got a technical brilliance to his game. I think that makes him really well suited to the eight role, being creative and build up, finding solutions to progressing the ball and then arriving in the box to shoot is perfect for him. But getting him to try to do, you know, threading the needle from the 10 position is not right for him anyway. So I still feel optimistic about Lo Celso, but basically the next match is going to be very telling in that regard.
So just following up on that Bentancur comment, we had a question from John Youngblood, who said, seeing a lot of supporters and people who cover the club suggesting that Bentancur can play the six or cover for Maddison, but for me, the role on the right-hand side of the midfield three looks like the best position for him. Could he provide cover for Bissouma or Maddison as well? This is already a question now about whether he can cover Maddison. It will also become a question in January when Bissouma goes to the African Cup of Nations. I agree with Nathan completely that Bentancourt is by far best suited to the eight role on the right that Sarr currently plays. But Bardi, do you think Bentancourt can also cover the six or the 10?
I think he can cover both in a better way than perhaps Sarr can, and perhaps even Shoibier can. So I think we may have to use him in that way. Ideally, I'd like to see Lo Celso being given the Maddison role, but Lo Celso's not playing until the early hours of Wednesday morning, I think, or Tuesday night. So I'm not sure what he's going to be like coming back for Sunday. We have to see.
Yeah, that's the ongoing question with Lo Celso, isn't it? He goes off on international duty, he gets injured, he comes back and he misses 4 weeks of football.
Yeah, because Argentina seem to have one of the kind of later games out of everyone else. Most people will be playing Monday, Tuesday, but it's not playing until Wednesday morning. I think Bentancur is a good enough player to do it, but will it be useful? I don't know. Or will it be effective? Probably not. But what else are we going to do, really?
Nathan, could he cover the six for you?
Yeah, maybe. There was a whole thing with him playing the six role at Juventus under Allegri and like not thriving but being asked to play that role, but obviously, you know, Allegri ball is pretty drastically different in terms of the structure and support that he'd have. So the eight role is perfect for him, assuming he can get back up to a high level of match fitness. I wouldn't mind seeing him play number six. I don't think he should be playing the number 10 for us much at all. Off the bench at the end of the game is not so bad, but to start in Madison's role isn't right. But I think the Spurs should be investing in a young understudy to Bissouma to play the backup number six role. That might not be until next season. So we're going to need someone to fill in those minutes. And between Højbjerg and Bentancur, we should be okay. Don't mind seeing Bentancur get a couple of games there to see how he does, because he can turn under pressure. That's for sure. There was one infamous moment. It might have been like a Champions League knockout game where he was playing the number six for Juve and he like played a bad pass under pressure that gave the ball away and the opposition scored a goal. And it's like that doesn't summarize his entire ability in that role, especially when you look at his general press resistance, right? So there's certainly more to it than that.
I just think if you play him at six, you take away a lot of the qualities that are his best qualities. So it would need to be a short-term cover thing. Because, of course, we haven't got Bissouma in January, but we also haven't got Sarr. So it's not like...
Sure, we need both, right?
You know, we need both roles covered. And I would rather have Højbjerg covering six and Bentancur playing to his right. Because he's an exceptional presser, he covers ground really well with his gait and his stride. He's really good at arriving in the box. Better than Sarr in that respect, I would say. Better finisher than Sarr. And I just really like him in that role.
I think I don't mind them the other way around. I think if you're missing a six and an eight, and you've got Bentancur and Højbjerg, I think that there's some sense to using Bentancur as a six and Højbjerg as the eight. I think still not ideal that you'd be in that situation, obviously. No. Yeah, I think
and it goes without saying, the bigger problem is covering Madison. That's the key conundrum.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When I started drinking AG1 daily, I noticed a few things change in terms of physical well-being, but it also had a big impact on my mental well-being. I know that no matter where I am, what I'm doing, I'm getting solid support, like Bissouma dropping deep and helping me out of a high press. With the festive period coming, if you're anything like my best friend and host Chris, you might be out and about and probably overdoing it. enjoying the yuletime cheer, the platters, pigs in blankets, and a glass of wine or three. Trying to balance your nutritional needs whilst enjoying the social aspect of December is tough. Your plans may take a backseat like Hugo in a tactical matchday planning meeting. So keep yourself tip-top by getting some AG1 in you. I know that no matter how hard I channel the festive spirit, I've got the good stuff backing me up. Give yourself the gift of AG1 this December and keep yourself balanced.
AG1 is the supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why they've been a partner for so long. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/extra inch. That's drinkag1.com/extra inch. Check it out. I want to say some thank yous for the emails we've been receiving recently. I really, really enjoy reading the emails that you submit to podcast@theextrainch.co.uk or through our website, theextrainch.co.uk. So thank you to Paul Ree, DJ Story, Joshua Almeida, Robert Palmer, James Smith, Joel Hooton, Vince Rico, Paul Maslin, Pridiven Pillai, Stephen Smith, Tom Bishop, Simon Tate, Alec Depkrinsky, Stephen Bosomley, and Jesper Sjögren. Great stuff. Thank you so much.
Your management of the inbox is quite impressive, Wendy. I've never seen anyone control an inbox like that. I go looking for stuff and it's already been filed away. I don't know where it is. You labeled stuff actions or just labeled Bardi, do this. It's quite impressive, mate.
Wendy, would you believe I have over 10,000 unread emails?
You filth bag. You absolutely disgust me. Nathan, you're the worst kind of person. I hate you. I hate you so much.
10,000? Like, you've never read. You must, since you created your account.
No, I used to be on top of it. I used to be, like, for years, I was on top of it. And then things got out of hand. And then, like, once they're out of hand, there's, you know, it's gone. There's no rescue in it.
Why don't you just mark it all as read? No, because you're never going to go back and read 10,000.
What if I do? What if I need to go to page 87 to go find an email that's relevant?
File them all under an actioned folder and start again from scratch.
Sure, dude.
That's the way forward. We have, as usual, been bashing out content on our Patreon. And actually, Bardi, you're doing some planning for the Bardi Advent Calendar, which will be starting on the 1st of December.
I'm getting prepped, Wendy. Last year, I think I did unsung goals. So like really good goals that we've missed or maybe have forgotten about. And someone spoke to me about, why don't you do like the top Spurs players? And that's a can of worms that I've decided to open myself up to. So I'm going to do my top 24 players in my lifetime. So that, unfortunately, there'll be no Blanchflower, Perryman, Hoddle, because I never saw them with my own eyes, mate. So they're not on the list, but it's really difficult. I found it more difficult to do numbers 15 to 24.
Mm, interesting.
Than actually the top players. Like, where do you stick Aaron Lennon? Where do you stick Jermaine Defoe? Where does Van der Vaart come in? Jurgen Klinsmann. So it's very difficult. The top five or six are kind of obvious. Maybe I'll change. Maybe it might surprise a few people who I've listed as number one. But yeah, it's definitely the lower numbers which are more complicated.
Nice. Lovely stuff. And our graphic designer, Trayton, made a really fun international break video ranking recent shirts in a tier system, which I found very enjoyable. And I imagine will be somewhat controversial because everyone's got opinions on kits.
It's one of those where a graphic designer says something's nice, but it's rubbish. Like, that's such a bad kit, Trayton. I had a little sneak peek. Like, that's such a... Maybe graphic designers see lines or angles different to me, but yeah, I disagree with a few of those.
I'm partway through the video. I'm really quite enjoying it. I like his insight. In the meantime, I've been working on my scouting list for January coming up. So the way that I'm now, approaching it is for three different lists for covering defense. So the idea is that, a bunch of left footers who can back up the left centre back role and then also maybe play the left back role, and then a bunch of right footers that can play back up to Romero and also play the right inverted fullback role. And the idea is that these guys are going to be some of them are going to be top five league players, but some of them are going to be from the tier below that, so Championship, Belgium, Portuguese League, Belgian League, some of these are going to be players who've only got one or two professional seasons under their belt so far. And then also looking at a unicorn, a third choice centre back who could play left or right and is already at that sort of first team level. So the idea is that you would have three players there playing back up to four different roles. So seven players sharing four starting roles. The thing with that is that next season, if we are in the Champions League, which we might not be, but I think we have to plan for the possibility that we are, there's going to be like... There's going to be like 70 games next season. Already every single year I go, Spurs don't have as good a squad depth as they could possibly have. They could work on that and build their squad a little better and a little deeper. That's even more the case. Like you've got to have like 20 players you can actually play next season if you're in the Champions League. And if you don't, then... And you go in with 15 players, then you're going to pick up injuries, and then you're going to be forced to play players that you don't trust. Obviously, that is its whole entire discussion point about how absurd the amount of football is going to be next season. But yeah, you can't be running out the same players week in, week out next season for sure if you're in the Champions League. So got to have depth there, big time.
Did Scalvini make the list?
Scalvini has not made the list yet, but is one to pay more attention to.
Because we keep getting linked.
Oh, do we?
And it worries me how much money we're going to drop on this child.
Oh. Did Juan Foyt make the list?
Foyt has turned up in the data.
Let it go.
He's kind of perfect for the right centre back / inverted fullback role.
Yeah, he kind of. So the thing is, when you take tables off of FBref for every player in a given league or the top five leagues, it doesn't differentiate between centre backs and fullbacks. So in order to filter out the centre backs, in order to filter out the fullbacks, I put in a filter that says, if you receive more than one progressive pass per 90, you're probably a fullback and you're discarded from the list. But Foyt isn't receiving progressive passes at all. He's literally playing a very wide centre back role for Villarreal, and that was like even with Emery moved on, which suggests like he's basically already kind of straddling the roles there pretty well. I wonder if he'd be interested in coming back for Spurs, or if he'd be someone who's like, well, no, because you never played me. but he is worth considering, and he does very strongly statistically resemble Christian Romero.
What about a little Kyle Walker swan song?
Well, he definitely couldn't play centre-back, that's for sure. So he would only be coming in as a second-choice inverted fullback. And I guess the thing with him is he could play left and right for sure, yeah? So he'd be coming in third-choice to both, and then that would affect your ability to cover the centre-backs if you brought in just a specialist inverted fullback cover. But then we could restructure things that way. Again, it's whether he wants to come back to a club that wouldn't play him and not be a first-choice player. But he's not the worst choice.
Okay. You thought I was talking about Kyle Walker-Peters.
Oh, wait.
I was talking about Kyle Walker.
Kyle Walker. Any day now, his knees are going to be gone. He's moments away from not being able to play elite football. There are
just
miles and
well.
Miles and miles in those knees. And Pep plays him week in, week out. He's ripe. He's ripe to pop.
He's too nailed at City as well, isn't he? There's no way he's leaving there. Let's do a couple of questions on Ange's approach before we wrap up. So this is from Kieran, who says, from what we've seen so far, is there enough balance in Ange's tactics? And how important is tactical balance for Spurs, considering we'll always be punching up against economic juggernauts like City, Chelsea and Newcastle? So we play City in 2 games' time. Do you think, Bardi, that Ange will change anything against City? And do you think he should?
I don't think he changes anything. Everything that comes out of that guy's mouth just makes me believe that he will never change. And that's if you're going to play a high line with 9 men, then you're gonna keep doing that when you've got 11. So he's not going to change. Should he? Probably. But then I'm a pragmatist, so I would always change. That's just how I am. But he won't change. He'll go for it against City, which worries me with our squad availability, how that will look like. But no, he's not going to change. He'll continue to play his football. It's what he says. And I will probably think lesser of him if he does change. You know, I think he should, but I want him to like commit. This is who I am. Commit to it, you know? Commit to it, be yourself, mate.
Nathan, do you think there'll be any tweaks around the edges? Do you think there is sufficient balance, as Kieran phrased it?
Yeah, there will be tweaks around the edges. The things he says about an absolute dedication to the way he plays is true, but there's a tiny bit of PR in there that might give the impression that there's no tweaking going on when there is. There definitely is week in, week out to several things, but that still comes with playing a high line against a team who are rapid over the top and have an absolute freak who plays centre forwards and could probably compete in the hurdles at an Olympic level, right? I think for now, I think this season and maybe next season, we take it as it comes and we say, this is the way that we play and we love it and we beat the small teams and we put up a decent performance against the bigger and better teams. And sometimes we fall short, but then sometimes you're going to fall short in those games anyway. And then maybe next season or the season after, we start to say, okay, this is where we're dropping points in the league. This is where we're dropping points against direct rivals and then finishing 3 points behind them. This is where we're getting knocked out of cup competition. You and Chris Somersell had a really good chat on Straight Out the Training Ground. Was it the last episode or the one before? About how this was the conversation under Pochettino. And then he made those tweaks and we sat deeper under Pochettino. We looked to play on the break and we won games against Liverpool. We won against Dortmund. We won against Real Madrid and it was brilliant. And we never recovered back to our style. And there are other factors in that, right? Losing Moussa Dembele. Terrible squad building and management and turnover in that time. Mm-hmm. Harry Kane losing his ankles. All those things are significant factors. But once you compromise, you're compromised, right? How significant that was for sure in that situation, I can't be certain. And we couldn't be sure how that would relate to us. But I think when Postecoglou has this very, very clear outward mentality of this is how we play, this is how I play, and that's it, to then later go back on that would be undermining himself a little bit. So, I mean, definitely the way I feel right now, and I suspect the way that I will probably feel for a long time, is I love it and I take the good with the bad. Maybe in 18 months' time we're reassessing, but... Or maybe after the City game, we reassess. I don't know. Who knows? But I'm so Postecoglou pilled right now. I can't get enough of it.
I think the way his Celtic team played against Real Madrid will be how we will continue. Like, he gave Real Madrid a really big fright.
They were the better team.
I think you analysed this game and they properly went for it against Real Madrid. They ultimately got spanked 3-0 and spanked in Spain as well, but they did go for it. They tried their best. They stuck to his plan. I think that's what we will do. And I'm a bit worried about what will happen. But you know, you hire this guy. You want him. You hired him for a reason. You can't make him change. He's not going to make everyone sit deep.
We were outplaying Chelsea until Romero lost his head. And I know that obviously Chelsea have been off to a bad start in the table, but they are a strong, strong team. And I think it's shown since, right? But that was a really impressive 20 minutes. And I know that makes me sound like an Arsenal fan, right? But I think we were on course to a really impressive victory until Romero lost his brain.
So he's got the Villa game to try and figure it out and then put it into action against City and hope that Haaland doesn't beat the Dyer Davis offside numerous times.
It's a write-off.
Which is a vile thing.
That game's a write-off. We're so far in expected goal debt to Man City. that's a freebie, right?
Yeah, they can have this
they
one.
They can have this one.
We'll get them later in the season when we're full strength again. Final question. This is from Stephen Doyle Page, and this was sent a few weeks ago. So that's the context. He says, I was interested in your thoughts on if Ange's use of squad rotation and subs is to ensure squad health or if it's just a byproduct of the needed changes. Examples have been Romero head injury, straight off. Udogi, knock and fatigue, subbed off against Fulham as soon as we get the second, not played at all in the next game. Son, knock fatigue, get 60 or 70 minutes then off, regardless of opposition or game state. Madison, knock fatigue, get 60 to 70 minutes then off, regardless of opponent or game state. Under previous managers, I have no doubt that Son and Madison would have played nearly every minute of every game, and one or both would probably have gotten injured. Udogie would probably have been forced back in for 60 minutes before pulling up with something. And I think the same can be said, actually, just to add to that, because this was sent a few weeks back. As soon as Madison felt something, he was whipped straight off. So, Bardi, do you think there's something going on here with Ange's, you know, preservation of the squad's health, or do you think it's more that he just thinks we need to make changes?
Well, I think Madison's been injured for a while. Madison's been trying to work his way through something. So I think Madison should have probably been rested, or at least not started in a couple of games, and we would maybe feel the benefits now with Lo Celso having started a couple of games. That might have worked for us. Son is physically drained after 60, 70 minutes at the moment, so there's like no choice but to take him off because he becomes a bit of a passenger. I don't know if you could say under previous managers they would have stayed on. I'm not sure. But I think the substitutions have been made out of necessity rather than him making sure that the squad's healthy.
I agree with the sort of analysis that Stevens put forward, and I was really impressed with him taking Romero off in particular after that head injury, having scored the goal. But I do think there could have been a bit more in terms of making late subs and involving some fringe players to ready them to step in should injuries occur. And I think the situation we find ourselves now in highlights that even more. It kind of underlines the point, you know, if Lo Celso had had a few more minutes before now, perhaps we'd feel more confident. If Brian Hill had been a bit more involved, perhaps we'd feel a bit more confident. It's been tough because so many players have been injured in the background. But I do feel like maybe Donnelly could have had a handful of minutes and we might have an idea of whether he could fit in. It's tough because we've been so restricted with the ongoing injuries, and not just the first 11 injuries, but the backup player injuries, you know, Solomon, Perisic, and now Richarlison, players that all would have played. Johnson, of course, came in, played, got injured, missed a bunch of games. So it has been really, really difficult. But yeah, I kind of feel like perhaps he could have been a bit bolder with some rotation.
I think so. Also, Romero wasn't injured scoring the goal. He was injured in defence, and then he stayed on the pitch, and then he went out for the free kick and scored a header with a concussion.
Yeah, that's right.
He wasn't straight off.
Oh yeah, I feel the exact same way as you two, so I don't have anything to add. Instead, I'll say, can we do Vince's question before we go?
Yeah, sure, go for it. Vince Rico says, with full knowledge we probably won't strengthen midfield until summer, what are your thoughts on Gladbach's Kwadio Kone or Atalanta's Edison as potentials for Bissouma's backup rotation or long-term successor? They seem to provide the correct size, stars and age profile. Also, thoughts on Bentancur in that role? Oh, we've already covered that. They seem to provide the correct size, stars and age profile. Going into the next year, theoretically in Europe, with Bissouma, Sarr, Madison, Bentancur, Kone, Redison, Donnelly and Devine, feels like a strong and balanced midfield, unless I'm way off on the aforementioned summer target. So what do you think, Nathan, on these two?
So, going back to what we talked about earlier with centre-back cover, the way I've been looking at the backup number six is I've primarily been looking at non-top five league players, looking at young players, players who are going to mostly sit on the bench most of the time, rather than top five league players. If I was looking at top five league players, then definitely Kone would be near the top of that list, for sure. Edison, I feel is more of a number eight type player, I think, but Kone for sure, would be essentially almost too good to just sit on the bench for us, basically. But again, actually talking about having, you know, 70 odd games potentially next season, maybe you just need two first 11s. By the way, guys, Vince's Substack, The Hiatus, is worth subscribing to go and check that out.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Barney, and our tactics guy, Nathan Aklar. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs, we love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.